Escuelas Oficiales de Idiomas de la Comunidad Autónoma de Canarias. Pruebas de certificación de nivel avanzado C2 de inglés. Convocatoria ordinaria de 2022. Prueba de comprensión de textos orales. Esta parte consta de 3 tareas. Escuchará cada grabación 2 veces. Escuche y lea las instrucciones al principio de cada tarea y realícelas según se indica. Las respuestas escritas a lápiz o en tinta roja no se calificarán. No está permitido el uso del diccionario. El uso de cualquier dispositivo electrónico queda prohibido durante toda la prueba. El móvil tendrá que permanecer apagado y guardado. No escriba en los recuadros sombreados, son espacios reservados para la calificación de las tareas.
Task 1. Listen to 6 radio advertisements, extracts 1 to 6, and match them with the sentence B to J that best corresponds to each one. There are 3 extra sentences you do not need. Extract 0 is an example. Now you have 1 minute to read the sentences. Example, extract 0.
Summer is coming. Time to get out and enjoy the garden. So there's no time to waste. Get down to Wickes and get your garden projects underway with 20% off all exterior lighting, 20% off all Wickes Performance power tools, and 33% off all deck boards. Wickes help with your big projects. That's why they were voted number 1 in an independent customer poll. So get the most out of your garden this summer. Get down to Wickes and put the pro into your project. Offers must end Sunday, 1st of June.
Extract 1.
All B&Q floors look terrific and are easy to lay too. And when you're finished, they're no problem to look after. B&Q's solid wood floors are a completely natural product of great beauty and durability. As they're made of solid wood, each board is unique and will show a subtle variety in patterns and color, just as nature intended.
Extract 2.
Ever wondered how to keep your hair looking salon perfect? Label M is the professional hair care range developed by Tony and Guy and sold exclusively in our salons. As well as enhancing your salon experience, Label M is also available to buy. Why not have a consultation with one of our dedicated hair care team to find the perfect product combination for your hair?
Extract 3.
Wouldn't life be so much easier if you could control your blinds at the touch of a button? With Ultra Smart Blinds from Appeal, there's no chains, cords or wiring because these stylish blinds are driven by a rechargeable power pack. There's a host of smart options too, including automatic timers, light and temperature sensitive controls. Everything, in fact, to get your shading just the way you like it. New Ultra Smart Blinds from Appeal, the intelligent solution for home shading.
Extract 4.
Right then, my little Shelby. It's time for walkies. And here we are, back home again. Look, it's no big deal. I've just decided to make your walk 97% less than it used to be.
Not Not everything's better with 97% less, but there's one thing that is. Introducing the new Kenko Eco Refill Pack with 97% less packaging weight.
Extract 5.
2 cappuccinos and 1 cranberry muffin. Don't forget your change, love. Well, that's one thing I've learnt in business. You've got to watch the pennies. That's why I like Sage Accounts software. It lets me see exactly where the money goes, so I can control my costs, make the most of my cash flow, and plan ahead. Oh, because every chain of coffee shops has to start somewhere.
Over 800,000 UK businesses choose Sage. Discover the potential of your business. Download our free guide at sage.co.uk/discover.
Extract 6.
Realtor.com presents real estate in real time.
Bang!
Oh, what's this? It's a Realtor.com app. It's like a real-time real estate secret weapon. Realtor.com is the home for all things real estate. It's got listings updated every 15 minutes, insanely comprehensive market data, expert real estate news and advice, and the ability to show you exactly what your neighbors paid for their house. Oh, hey, neighbors! They used a secret weapon, and now they're living the dream in a really nice house. It's so cute.
Listen again. Example, extract 0.
Summer is coming. Time to get out and enjoy the garden. So there's no time to waste. Get down to Wickes and get your garden projects underway with 20% off all exterior lighting, 20% off all Wickes Performance Power Tools, and 33% off all deck boards. Wickes help with your big projects. That's why they were voted number 1 in an independent customer poll. So get the most out of your garden this summer. Get down to Wickes and put the pro into your project. Offers must end Sunday, 1st of June.
Extract 1.
All B&Q floors look terrific and are easy to lay too. And when you're finished, they're no problem to look after. B&Q's solid wood floors are a completely natural product of great beauty and durability. As they're made of solid wood, each board is unique and will show a subtle variety in patterns and colour, just as nature intended.
Extract 2.
Ever wondered how to keep your hair looking salon perfect? Label M is the professional hair care range developed by Tony and Guy and sold exclusively in our salons. As well as enhancing your salon experience, Label M is also available to buy. Why not have a consultation with one of our dedicated hair care team to find the perfect product combination for your hair?
Extract 3.
Wouldn't life be so much easier if you could control your blinds at the touch of a button? With Ultra Smart Blinds from Appeal, there's no chains, cords or wiring because these stylish blinds are driven by a rechargeable power pack. There's a host of smart options too, including automatic timers, light and temperature sensitive controls. Everything, in fact, to get your shading just the way you like it. New Ultra Smart Blinds from Appeal, the intelligent solution for home shading.
Extract 4.
Right then, my little Shelby. It's time for walkies. And here we are, back home again. Look, it's no big deal. I've just decided to make your walk 97% less than it used to be.
Not everything's better with 97% less, but there's one thing that is. Introducing the new Kenko Eco Refill Pack with 97% less packaging weight.
Extract 5.
2 cappuccinos and 1 cranberry muffin. Don't forget your change, love. Well, that's one thing I've learnt in business. You've got to watch the pennies. That's why I like Sage Accounts software. It lets me see exactly where the money goes, so I can control my costs, make the most of my cash flow, and plan ahead. Oh, because every chain of coffee shops has to start somewhere.
Over 800,000 UK businesses choose Sage. Discover the potential of your business. Download our free guide at sage.co.uk/discover.
Extract 6.
Realtor.com presents Real Estate in Real Time.
Bang!
Oh, what's this? It's a Realtor.com app. It's like a real-time real estate secret weapon. Realtor.com is the home for all things real estate. It's got listings updated every 15 minutes, insanely comprehensive market data, expert real estate news and advice, and the ability to show you exactly what your neighbors paid for their house. Oh, hey, neighbors! They use a secret weapon, and now they're living the dream in a really nice house. It's so cute.
This is the end of task one. Now turn to task two. Task two. Listen to Ian McEwan speaking about his writing process and answer the following questions in no more than 8 words. Question zero is an example. Now you have 1 minute and 30 seconds to read the questions.
I'm a morning kind of person. I'm very lucky to have an enormous study and library in London with floor to ceiling Georgian windows overlooking a very pretty square. So it's a good environment to be in. I feel very lucky to have it. I have two desks, one with a giant kind of flat screen, Apple screen on it, and it's a huge table. In fact, I have to say, it's the only thing I've ever made myself. I built it years ago. It was the kitchen table in another house, and it must be about 12 feet long. And my dream for this table is that it would just contain the computer and lots of space around for notes. It fills constantly with books and bits of paper and, I like to have a clear, organized space around me, but I find it difficult to manage. For some reason, I'd rather clean up the kitchen than clean up my study. Why is that? Because throwing a piece of paper away always requires one to look at the piece of paper to see what it says before you throw it away, whereas putting a dish in a dishwasher requires no mental act. Maybe it's that. I always believe that it's very important to turn up at this desk. whether you feel like it or not, whether you have ideas or not, you've got to have the work ethic that makes you show up. When I've got a piece of work going, I like to be there by about 9:30. It's very important to close off all those avenues to the outside world, like the internet, the email, the telephone. So I switch all those things off, and try and get a solid bit of work done before lunchtime. And a solid bit of work for me would be somewhere between 500 and 800 words. And I'd feel happy then if I'd got that down. If it's going well, I would work all afternoon on the same thing, and then maybe after dinner too, and into the night, if it was rolling along. But generally, the afternoons I try and leave for reading. And again, to take reading seriously, and so between maybe 2 and 4 o'clock, not answer the phone because I'm reading. And I remember when I was a very devoted reader as a child, it will strike me even then at the age of 9 that if you're reading a book, people would assume you were therefore doing nothing, and that they were entitled to talk to you. Well, I still battle against that notion that it's an activity, and if someone was playing tennis, you wouldn't walk onto the court and start engaging them in a conversation. Likewise, I think reading is at least as important as playing tennis. My friend Christopher Hitchens once said that one of his definitions of happiness was to work all day in the knowledge that he was seeing an interesting friend in the evening. So sometimes that interesting friend is my wife, or one of my children, or one of my interesting friends. But I do like that sense that there's going to be food and wine from about 7:30 on. If it fits, I'll go back after dinner, maybe to look at the day's work again.
Listen again.
I'm a morning kind of person. I'm very lucky to have an enormous study and library in London with floor to ceiling Georgian windows overlooking a very pretty square. So it's a good environment to be in. I feel very lucky to have it. I have 2 desks, one with a giant kind of flat screen, Apple screen on it. And it's a huge table. In fact, I have to say, it's the only thing I've ever made myself. I built it years ago. It was the kitchen table in another house. And it must be about 12 feet long. And my dream for this table is that it would just contain the computer and lots of space around for notes. It fills constantly with books and bits of paper, and I like to have a clear, organized space around me, but I find it difficult to manage. For some reason, I'd rather clean up the kitchen than clean up my study. Why is that? Because throwing a piece of paper away always requires one to look at the piece of paper to see what it says before you throw it away, whereas putting a dish in a dishwasher requires no mental act. Maybe it's that. I always believe that it's very important to turn up at this desk. Whether you feel like it or not, whether you have ideas or not, you've got to have the work ethic that makes you show up. When I've got a piece of work going, I like to be there by about 9:30. It's very important to close off all those avenues to the outside world, like the internet, the email, the telephone. So I switch all those things off. And try and get a solid bit of work done before lunchtime. And a solid bit of work for me would be somewhere between 500 and 800 words. And I'd feel happy then if I'd got that down. If it's going well, I would work all afternoon on the same thing, and then maybe after dinner too and into the night, if it was rolling along. But generally, the afternoons I try and leave for reading. And again, to take reading seriously, and so between maybe 2 and 4 o'clock, not answer the phone because I'm reading. And I remember when I was a very devoted reader as a child, it would strike me even then at the age of 9 that if you're reading a book, people would assume you were therefore doing nothing. And they were entitled to talk to you. Well, I still battle against that notion that it's an activity. And you would no longer, you wouldn't, if someone was playing tennis, you wouldn't walk onto the court and start engaging them in a conversation. Likewise, I think reading is at least as important as playing tennis. My friend Christopher Hitchens once said that one of his definitions of happiness was to work all day in the knowledge that he was seeing an interesting friend in the evening. So sometimes that interesting friend is my wife, or one of my children, or one of my interesting friends. But I do like that sense that there's going to be food and wine from about 7:30 on. If it fits, I'll go back after dinner, maybe to look at the day's work again.
This is the end of task 2. Now turn to task 3. Task 3. Listen to a radio interview with Michael Simpkins about his trip to the Crimea. Read the sentences and write T, true, or F, false, in the table on the answer sheet. Sentence 0 is an example. Now you have 1 minute and 30 seconds to read the sentences.
actor and author Michael Simpkins had always cherished an ambition to visit the site of the Battle of Balaclava in Crimea ever since his father took him to see the 1968 biopic The Charge of the Light Brigade with impossibly dashing David Hemmings and Trevor Howard. Perhaps the person most British people might associate with that period is Florence Nightingale, who arrived in Istanbul, also in 1854, to look after the soldiers from the war who were taken across the Black Sea to the hospital in Scutari. Florence was later hailed as a heroine, but the Charge of the Light Brigade became known for its heroic failure, captured in Tennyson's poem, you'll remember from school, Into the Valley of Death Rode the 600, and so on. And Michael, what was it about? Was it their grace under fire? Is that sort of the nobility of...
Yes, I think it was. I mean, obviously it's easy to overdo all that and to think, oh, weren't they wonderful, you know, riding towards a cannon. But nevertheless, it was a different age. It's very difficult to imagine now exactly the mindset that took these people 2,000 or 3,000 yards. It took them 7 minutes to cover the distance. And the further they advanced into this shallow valley, the greater the fire that came. I think it was nearly 200 of the 600 that set off, didn't make it back, or were severely injured. But certainly the courage that it must have taken to have just kept on your horse and kept going. I mean, one has to admire it.
Well, let's start with the battlefield. So you arrived by train. What did you do? To get a taxi and say, could you take me to the Valley of Death, please?
Yes,
how does it work?
That's exactly what you do. You arrive in Sebastopol, and it's just a few miles outside. I mean, actually, there is a sort of mundanity about the actual site of the battlefield itself, which is, in its own way, its very ordinariness is why it's so moving. It's the actual valley. It's hardly a valley at all. It's just a shallow descent, now covered in thick vines. There's also a very busy arterial road that just skirts the top of it. It's really a valley of death yourself when you get out of the taxi and you're trying to stumble down this escarpment with great pantechnicons roaring past you at 80 miles an hour. There's very, very little to signify exactly what took place there, except for a white obelisk that was put up by the Allied forces only a couple of years after the glorious charge took place. But as I say, it's in its very ordinariness that, as in so many of the sites in the Crimea, it's the fact that they haven't been, if you'll excuse the word, Disneyfied.
Right, so there's no gift shop.
There's no gift shop, there's no Crimean experience, there's no, you know, buy Lord Cardigan's cardigan, you know, two for one.
I do think that is a business opportunity that's been missed, though. What are the locals interested?
Well, there's so much military history surrounding that area that it's impossible not to stumble on it almost at every turn, because Sebastopol obviously was not only fought over by during the Crimean War, but also was then a great site of Second World War warfare as well, when the Germans were trying to invade. You've then got all the Soviet nuclear submarine, the big nuclear submarine base that's in the Bay of Balaclava.
Well, let's come on to that, because Sebastopol itself is, as I understand it, the biggest natural harbour in the world.
It's a beautiful place, and I wasn't prepared for just how lovely it was. It's got a very dreamy quality about it. All the buildings are built in this what's called white Inkerman stone. It's a sort of milky hue it's got, and it gives the whole thing a rather ethereal feel, particularly on an October day when I was there, when it was sort of pale watery or autumnal sunshine. There was almost a ghost-like feel about it. It's a very quiet town, and everywhere you go you can see this bay with this sort of milky blue water lapping against the harbour. It's a very, very special place, well worth going to.
Now, you were inspired by a film in the first instance to go, and I believe when you went to the huge naval complex that was secret during Second World War, Balaclava Bay, that's a bit film-like as well, isn't it?
Yeah, you would feel like you're on the set of a James Bond movie, except no Hollywood studio could possibly afford such an extraordinary edifice. It's a huge, really a city of underground chambers that was built by the Soviets to house their Black Sea submarine fleet, 7 submarines, 1,000 people working on them, and it could withstand a nuclear attack by America.
Wow.
So there are 150-ton doors that guard it, and once you're inside, you're in this endless labyrinth of dank chambers and workmen's dormitories. It really is extraordinary. It costs you about 40 pence to get in. The day that I was there, the only other people in the entire complex were a couple from Slough.
They get everywhere.
They do, I'm afraid. And, you know, that's sort of one of the wonderful things about it, is that you can wander these things and your experience is not interrupted by the fact that it's been tarted up for the tourists. And in the middle of the darkest, deepest submarine chamber of all, why I've never found out, there is an exhibition to the Crimea War that's just in a little room. You go and it's like being in a library. And there, in the middle of all this Soviet history and the submarine history and the Cold War history, then there's this extraordinary display of Crimean artefacts. It really is an extraordinary juxtaposition.
So are you saying it's not very commercialised, that it's not a huge tourist industry? I mean, if it's just you and a couple from Slough, it's not going that well, is what I would say.
I think one of the reasons is that so much in the Crimea, they're still just opening up and deciding what they're going to do with. And it was a bit like when I went to Chekhov's house, which is also quite nearby. Admittedly, I was there slightly out of season in October, but I went round Chekhov's dacha, where he wrote The Three Sisters and The Cherry Orchard. I was the only person in the entire house for the hour I was there. My only accompanist was an elderly Crimean woman who tried to give me a guide in fractured English. I couldn't understand a word of it, but you didn't need to. You were standing in Chekhov's dining room. There was the piano on which Rachmaninoff played. Shelley Arpin stood there accompanying in ballads.
For an actor, that's got to be as good as it gets.
Listen again.
Actor and author Michael Simpkins had always cherished an ambition to visit the site of the Battle of Balaclava in Crimea ever since his father took him to see the 1968 biopic The Charge of the Light Brigade with impossibly dashing David Hemmings and Trevor Howard. Perhaps the person most British people might associate with that period is Florence Nightingale, who arrived in Istanbul, also in 1854, to look after the soldiers from the war who were taken across the Black Sea to the hospital in Scutari. Florence was later hailed as a heroine, but The Charge of the Light Brigade became known for its heroic failure, captured in Tennyson's poem, you'll remember from school, Into the Valley of Death Rode the 600, and so on. And Michael, what was it about? Was it their grace under fire? Is that sort of the nobility of...
Yes, I think it was. I mean, obviously it's easy to overdo all that and to think, oh, weren't they wonderful, you know, riding towards a cannon. But nevertheless, it was a different age. It's very difficult to imagine now exactly the mindset that took these people 2,000 or 3,000 yards. It took them 7 minutes to cover the distance. And the further they advanced into this shallow valley, the greater the fire that came. I think it was nearly 200 of the 600 that set off didn't make it back or were severely injured. But certainly the courage that it must have taken to have just kept on your horse and kept going. I mean, one has to admire it.
Well, let's start with the battlefield. So you arrived by train. What did you do? To get a taxi and say, could you take me to the Valley of Death, please?
Yes,
how does it work?
That's exactly what you do. You arrive in Sebastopol, and it's just a few miles outside. I mean, actually, there is a sort of mundanity about the actual site of the battlefield itself, which is, in its own way, its very ordinariness is why it's so moving. It's the actual valley. It's hardly a valley at all. It's just a shallow descent, now covered in thick vines. There's also a very busy arterial road that just skirts the top of it. It's really a valley of death yourself when you get out of the taxi and you're trying to stumble down this escarpment with great pantechnicons roaring past you at 80 miles an hour. There's very, very little to signify exactly what took place there, except for a white obelisk that was put up by the Allied forces only a couple of years after the glorious charge took place. But as I say, it's in its very ordinariness that, as in so many of the sites in the Crimea, it's the fact that they haven't been, if you'll excuse the word, Disneyfied.
Right, so there's no gift shop.
There's no gift shop, there's no Crimean experience, there's no, you know, buy Lord Cardigan's cardigan, you know, two for one.
I do think that is a business opportunity that's been missed, though. What are the locals interested?
Well, there's so much military history surrounding that area that it's impossible not to stumble on it almost at every turn, because Sebastopol obviously was not only fought over by during the Crimean War, but also was then a great site of Second World War warfare as well, when the Germans were trying to invade. You've then got all the Soviet nuclear submarine, the big nuclear submarine base that's in the Bay of Balaclava.
Well, let's come on to that, because Sebastopol itself is, as I understand it, the biggest natural harbour in the world.
It's a beautiful place, and I wasn't prepared for just how lovely it was. It's got a very dreamy quality about it. All the buildings are built in this what's called white Inkerman stone. It's a sort of milky hue it's got, and it gives the whole thing a rather ethereal feel, particularly on an October day when I was there, when it was sort of pale watery or autumnal sunshine. There was almost a ghost-like feel about it. It's a very quiet town, and everywhere you go you can see this bay with this sort of milky blue water lapping against the harbour. It's a very, very special place, well worth going to.
Now, you were inspired by a film in the first instance to go, and I believe when you went to the huge naval complex that was secret during Second World War, Balaclava Bay, that's a bit film-like as well, isn't it?
Yeah, you would feel like you're on the set of a James Bond movie, except no Hollywood studio could possibly afford such an extraordinary edifice. It's a huge, really a city of underground chambers that was built by the Soviets to house their Black Sea submarine fleet, 7 submarines, 1,000 people working on them, and it could withstand a nuclear attack by America.
Wow.
So there are 150-ton doors that guard it, and once you're inside, you're in this endless labyrinth of dank chambers and workmen's dormitories. It really is extraordinary. It cost you about 40 pence to get in. The day that I was there, the only other people in the entire complex were a couple from Slough.
They get everywhere.
They do, I'm afraid. And, you know, that's sort of one of the wonderful things about it, is that you can wander these things and your experience is not interrupted by the fact that it's been tarted up for the tourists. And in the middle of the darkest, deepest submarine chamber of all, why I've never found out, there is an exhibition to the Crimea War that's just in a little room. You go and it's like being in a library. And there, in the middle of all this Soviet history and the submarine history and the Cold War history, then there's this extraordinary display of Crimean artefacts. It really is an extraordinary juxtaposition.
So are you saying it's not very commercialised, that it's not a huge tourist industry? I mean, if it's just you and a couple from Slough, it's not going that well, is what I would say.
I think one of the reasons is that so much in the Crimea, they're still just opening up and deciding what they're going to do with. And it was a bit like when I went to Chekhov's house, which is also quite nearby. Admittedly, I was there slightly out of season in October, but I went round Chekhov's dacha, where he wrote The Three Sisters and The Cherry Orchard. I was the only person in the entire house for the hour I was there. My only accompanist was an elderly Crimean woman who tried to give me a guide in fractured English. I couldn't understand a word of it, but you didn't need to. You were standing in Chekhov's dining room. There was the piano on which Rachmaninoff played. Shelley Arpin stood there accompanying in ballads.
For an actor, that's got to be as good as it gets.
This is the end of task 3. Now you have 3 minutes to write your answers on the answer sheet. This is the end of the listening comprehension test.